Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on climate change when we come back. You know, with an income of $50,000, you pay $7,650 in Social Security taxes. That's if you're self-employed and you're paying that 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance? Instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 twice? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the $50,000 in Social Security tax once. Then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. Well, that means that you paid 17% of the $7,650 twice. Now, that little bookkeeping trick steals an extra $1,300 from everyone who pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? Well, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we're back with climate change, the BS that goes along with it. There's a publication put out, it's being followed by our Congress, called Climate Change, the report of the Governmental International Panel on Climate Change. And they've been working on that for about 15 years, started about, well, pushing 20 now. They started around 1990 with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, coming up with a new crisis. And they've got one. They've got a new crisis here. It's called global warming. And if we don't solve this global warming problem, mankind is going to become extinct upon the planet. Well, at least that's what we're being told. Now, this Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it's called the IPCC, alleges that the recent decreases in ice mass are correlated with rising surface air temperatures, and more specifically, that the late 20th century glacial wastage likely has been a response to post-1970 warming. And this warming, now they're telling us, has come since 1970. The last 40 years. The strongest mass losses per unit area have been observed in Patagonia, Alaska, and Northwest United States and Southwest Canada. Because of the corresponding large areas and the largest contributions to sea level rise came from Alaska, the Arctic, and the Asian high mountains, when taken together, the ice sheets in Greenland and Antarctica have very likely been contributing to sea level rise over 1993 to 2003. This is a report now from the IPCC. These are the people that are telling you that you have this global crisis. These are governmentally sponsored science projects paid for by you, the taxpayer, so that you'll know where your tax dollars are being spent. This is what they're being spent on. Now, it should be obvious, but apparently it is not, that such facts as melting glaciers and disappearing Arctic sea ice, while they are very interesting, are totally irrelevant to eliminating the causes of this warming, if any. Any significant warming, whether it's anthropogenic or natural, will melt ice, often very slowly. Therefore, claims that anthropogenic global warming, that's AGW, is occurring that are backed by such accounts are simply confusing the consequences of warming with the causes of what's causing this warming. It's a very common, but it's a very logical error. In addition, fluctuations of glacier mass, sea ice, precipitation, and sea level depend upon many other factors other than temperature and are poor measuring devices for global warming. This chapter, Chapter 4, summarizes the extensive scientific literature on glaciers, sea ice, precipitation, and sea level rise that frequently contradicts and rarely reinforces the IPCC's claims quoted above. Glaciers around the world are continuously advancing and retreating, with no evidence of a trend that can be linked to CO2 concentrations in the air. Now, the same is largely true of sea ice, precipitation patterns, and sea levels. All of these fluctuate in response to processes that are totally unrelated to CO2 and therefore cannot be taken either as signs of anthropogenic global warming or of climate disasters that may be yet to come. So let's take a look at Chapter 4, the first subject matter called glaciers. I got to parenthetically insert here that I was watching PBS the other day, and they went up to Glacier National Park up in Montana, and they showed pictures of the glaciers up there that have been retreating over the last 30 years. Now, one thing is for certain, these glaciers in Glacier National Park have been retreating. They showed pictures back in the 1930s, and then the 40s, 50s, 60s, not up to the present, and the obvious conclusion that we'd have to arrive at, in some cases, these glaciers are just totally gone. In most cases, the glaciers are there, but they're in the process of melting away, and then they estimate 20, 30, 40 years are going to be totally gone. And so they come up with the conclusion, well, you see this CO2 in the atmosphere being caused by Bethlehem Steel making steel, and you driving your automobile has caused global warming, and the temperature has gone up, and since the temperature has gone up, the ice has melted. Now, that's a conclusion, but in law we call that a conclusion based upon insufficient facts. Insufficient facts. Just because there's melting going on doesn't mean that the melting was caused by the tailpipe of your automobile. Well, we can all agree that there's melting going on in Glacier National Park. That is not indicative of the fact that glaciers are melting around the world, because in some places around the world, the glaciers are not melting. They are getting bigger. They're expanding. Now, how do you account for glaciers that are expanding in some locations and retreating in other locations? Now, it's true we're in a global warming trend. It started in 1850. For 150 years, there's been a steady, slow rise in air temperature around the world. From 1550 to 1850, remember, was called the Little Ice Age. Temperatures were getting colder. And from 1850 to the present, they've been getting warmer. This is an oscillation. This is a natural phenomenon that occurs. We don't know what causes it, whether it's sunspots, whether it's God who just turns the thermostat up and turns the thermostat down here on planet Earth. We don't know what's causing it. The theory is that it's carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. That's the theory. So far, we have debunked that theory every single time we've opened up the pages here of the opposite to the IPCC, that is the report of the non-governmental International Panel on Climate Change, which was put out by the Heartland Institute. Remember, this is an 850-page scientific report. It covers about 70 subjects. I didn't count every single one of them here, but I kind of estimated them. Things like polar bears are dying out, storms, storm surges, snow, temperature, wildfires, drought, glaciers, carbon sequestration, sea level. Just, you know, to name a few. And what we're finding here is that this is a bogus argument. Not that it's going to change anything. Governments are committed to fighting this war. You know, it used to be the war on drugs, you know, now we got the war on cancer, you know, going on, and now we're going to have the war on climate change. We're going to go out here and fix that thermostat that God screwed up. Now, model studies indicate that CO2-induced global warming will result in significant melting of the Earth's glaciers, contributing to a rise in global sea level. So in this section, we examine global trends and data from Africa, Antarctica, the Arctic, Europe, North America, South America, and additional information on this topic, including reviews of glaciers not discussed here, may be found at www.co2science.org under the heading Glaciers. So first of all, let's take a look at global glaciers. The full story must begin with a recognition of just how few glacier data exist. Of the 160,000 glaciers that are presently known to exist here on planet Earth, 67,000 of them, that is 42%, have been inventoried to any degree. That's published by Kiefer et al. In 2000. Now, there are 160,000 glaciers in the world. Only 67,000 of them, or 42%, that's less than half, have been inventoried to any degree. So 58% have not been inventoried at all. We don't know how much ice is in them, and we don't know whether they're expanding or contracting. Now, when you're watching PBS, you would think that, well, there's about 150 glaciers in the world, and all of them are melting, and here are the ones that are melting the most. Now, that's the story that I got. That's the story that you're getting. But when we take a look here at the story of glaciers, there's 160,000 glaciers. Did you know that? Because until I read it here, I didn't know how many there were either. Didn't have a clue. Now you know, 160,000. Of the 160,000 glaciers, 67,000 of them have been inventoried or are in the process of being inventoried. So let's see how many aren't. Take 160. We'll plug that in to our Sharp EL1197 here. And let's take 67 of those. All right, that leaves 93. 93,000 glaciers here on planet Earth, nobody has ever inventoried or looked at. We don't have a clue as to whether 93,000 of them are expanding or contracting. How do you like that? So therefore, it's a little premature to make the claim that overall glaciers are retreating. We know of the 67,000 that we are measuring and inventorying that some of them are expanding and some of them are contracting. Well, hell, we get that with El Nino every few years, don't we? Where it rains like hell in one place and it's a drought condition in another. Those are cycles that go on. Now, these cycles have been going on for, we think, thousands of years. We don't really know that because we weren't here thousands of years ago making these measurements, but we presume, because of uniformitarian philosophy, that if it's going on today, it's been going on just like that for thousands of years. That doesn't make it true. That just means that that's the way we believe. Now, mass balance data, which would be positive for growth, negative for shrinkage, exist for more than a single year for only slightly more than 200 of these glaciers. All right, now let's pause here now and think about this for a second. We have 160,000 glaciers in the world. 67,000 glaciers have some inventorying being done, but there's only 200 glaciers for which we have any concrete information. 200. And their conclusion that all the glaciers in the world are melting is based upon these 200. Now let's see what percentage that is. If we took 200 and divided that by 160,000, it's 0.00125. It's less than 1 in 1,000 glaciers that are being measured. That's a pretty small sampling. To come to a conclusion based upon that kind of a small sampling takes a leap of faith. Now, when you believe in Jesus or believe in God or believe in miracles in the Bible, you're called some kind of a religious kook. But if you believe in global warming and the glaciers are all melting away based upon a percentage sample of 0.00125, you're looked upon as being a scientist, a genius, a mental giant. I say it's BS. Now, when the length of record increases to 5 years, this number drops to 115 glaciers, and if both winter and summer mass balances are required, the number drops to 79. Furthermore, if 10 years of record is used as a cutoff, only 42 glaciers worldwide qualify. This lack of glacial data, in the words of Braithwaite and Zhang, highlights one of the most important problems for mass balance glaciology, and demonstrates the sad fact that many glacierized regions of the world remain unsampled or only poorly sampled, suggesting that we really know very little about the true state of most of the world's glaciers. That's the first paragraph. If you want this report, you can probably pick it up off of the internet free. If you want the report on glaciers, I think you'll find it at www.co2science.org under the heading Glaciers. Now, if you want the entire report, you go to the Heartland Institute. Heartland Institute, they're located at 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903, Chicago, Illinois. 60603, and their phone number is 312-377-4000. I'll sharpen your pencil here on the other end. I'll give it to you again. The phone number again is 312, it's the area code, 312-377-4000. Why don't you give them a call and say, hey, tell me something about this. Then if you want to write them a letter, it's called the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, number 903, Suite 903, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Now, they've also got a webpage. It's called theheartland.org. Not the. Now, it's www.heartland.org. And they'll give you the non-governmental, the non-propaganda report on the same subjects that the IPCC reported on, and which the Congress has now voted on. Now, as I pointed out in the first program in this series, we can expect a 77-cent a gallon tax increase, that's for openers, and a doubling of our electric bills over the next few years. I don't know how long it'll take them to get this thing cranked up, but they want money and they're going to tax us. At the beginning of the most horrendous depression in the history of the world, they're going to raise our taxes and give us the largest tax increase in the history of the United States. And I would guess that the rest of you people in England, Ireland, Scotland, and Germany, and Japan, and China, and the rest of you around the world are also going to experience the same kind of tax increase, because this is a global program, and we're going to do this globally. And I'm not here to tell you it's good or bad or right or wrong. I'm just here to report on the fact that we're getting bamboozled here. We've been lied to. We're assuming facts, not in evidence. So I thought, let's take a look at glaciers here today. And then let's see if the melting of glaciers, this is what I'm watching on PBS. I'm sure you're seeing the same thing where you're at. They'll show you a glacier, and it's melting. Boys and girls, out of 160,000 glaciers in the world, some of them are melting away and disappearing. And some of them are expanding and getting bigger and bigger. Only 200 of them are being sampled or have been sampled over the last 20 years. And only 42 glaciers can qualify over the past 10 years as having had a substantial amount of tracking or data collected. That was 0.00.125 of the total. Now, during the 15th through the 19th centuries, 1500 to 1900, widespread and major glacier advances occurred during a period of colder global temperature known as the Little Ice Age. Brocker, 2001, and Grove, in 2001, made this study. Many records indicate widespread glacial retreat as temperatures began to rise in the mid to late 1800s, and many glaciers returned to positions characteristic of pre-Little Age or Ice Age times, and in many instances, the rate of glacier retreat has not increased over the past 70 years, during a time when the atmosphere experienced the bulk of the increase in its CO2 content. Now, we're out here studying, you know, remember we were talking about a kid, you know, that graduates from high school, he goes to college, he becomes a biologist. His job then, in order to maintain employment for himself, is to show that the polar bears are disappearing. Well, glaciologists are doing the same thing. They go to college and they want to major, and so they say, well, I'm going to become a glaciologist. So they go out and they start using taxpayer money, and they're measuring glaciers. Well, what if glaciers are all right and there's no big problems out there? Is that going to get you very excited? Make you want to write to your senator or representative and encourage him to vote for more money for glacial studies? But if this glaciologist goes out and he finds a glacier that's expanding in size and there's no problem, he says to himself, if I go out and report that to the people, they're going to say, cut off his funding. We don't need to know any more about that. So let me go up to Glacier National Park where they are melting, and then let me take pictures and let me look at this melting and then come back and report, oh my God, the glaciers are melting away. Then let me tell the people why. It's carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. That'll get you excited. That'll get you to the point where you say, well, I guess maybe we need to pay more taxes so that we can find out why these glaciers are melting away. And then we can stop their melting. Because after all, you might want to go to Glacier National Park. And when you get to Glacier National Park, don't you want to see some glaciers when you get there? Now, in an analysis of Arctic glacier mass balance, Dowdswell in 1997 found that out of the 18 glaciers with the longest mass balance histories, just over 80% displayed negative mass balances over their periods of record, and yet they additionally report that almost 80% of the mass balance time series also have a positive trend toward a less negative mass balance. Although these Arctic glaciers continue to lose mass, as they have probably done since the end of the Little Ice Age, they're losing smaller amounts each year, which is hardly what one would expect in the face of what some incorrectly call the unprecedented warming of the latter part of the 20th century. Now, these glaciers are losing mass, and they're losing mass and have been for 150 years. There has been a warming of the Earth's temperature. But as we found out with polar sea ice, the warming of the air mass is not the controlling factor as to how much sea ice is produced in a year. There's humidity, and there's sea temperatures that also come into the equation. There's four of these indices. Now, the fact that the world is warming up and the glaciers are melting back does not spell the end of mankind, because there was an even greater warming period for twice as long, 600 years, from 600 to 1200 AD, in which the polar bears did not become extinct and the glaciers did retreat. And indeed, we can see evidence of glaciers that were covering the North American continent as far south as Minnesota and Wisconsin, the Great Lakes, and they have retreated. More than likely, they were retreating during that period of time from 600 to 1200 AD. The world did not come to an end with the mass melting of the glaciers off the North American continent, and indeed probably from around the world. Now, somebody comes along and says, well, we've got to stop this. And my first question is, why? It's like trying to stop sunspots. Every so many years, I think it's about every 11 years, there's an increase in sunspot activity which causes interruptions here on planet Earth of electrical communications and electric power grids, and it's really a bad thing to happen. And I don't hear anybody saying, my God, we have to go to the sun and stop those sunspots. Not that anybody could do anything about them anyway. It's a natural phenomenon. The cycle's 11 years, and it's been going on for God knows how long. And the reality of it is, boys and girls, there just isn't anything that you and I can do about sunspots, any more than there's anything that you and I can do about global warming. Before we started burning this gasoline and coal-fired power plants and generating electricity in 1850, before that, before the world started warming up, there were forces that were beyond the scope of man to deal with. And they are still beyond the scope of man to deal with. We're talking about God, maybe, can do something about sunspots. And God, maybe, can do something about global warming. But there isn't anything that Al Gore or you and I or anybody else is going to do about it. And furthermore, to conclude that CO2 is the cause of it is assuming facts, not an evidence. That's the hard, cold truth, as Al Gore would say. There isn't any evidence that CO2 was causing it. Why? Well, because the global warming began before the CO2 increases in the atmosphere. And man wasn't doing anything to increase the CO2 until about 1950. So for the first 100 years, from 1850 to 1950, this was going on, and nobody got too excited about it. In fact, nobody got excited about global warming until about 1990, when the Cold War ended and we needed a new crisis. Now, the new crisis is for the purposes of getting us all excited so that we'll go along with these tax increases, which I'm sure everybody's going to do, but I thought I would report that it's a bogus basis for increasing your taxes. Now, when we look at an analysis of Arctic glacier mass balance, Dowdswell in 1997 found that of the 18 glaciers with the longest mass balance histories, just over 80% displayed negative mass balances. 20% showed positive balances, that is, they're increasing in size. Well, then, if CO2 is warming the atmosphere, why is it that 20% are increasing and 80% are decreasing? Does this carbon dioxide have a discriminatory policy against some glaciers, but not all? Now, similar results have been reported by Brathwaite in 2002, who reviewed and analyzed mass balance measurements of 246 glaciers from around the world that were made between 1946 and 1995. According to Brathwaite, there are several regions with highly negative mass balances in agreement with a public perception of the glaciers are melting. But there are also regions with positive balances. Within Europe, for example, he notes that alpine glaciers are generally shrinking. Scandinavian glaciers are growing. And glaciers in the Caucasus are close to equilibrium for the period 1980 to 1995. And when results for the whole world are combined for this most recent period of time, Brathwaite notes that there is no obvious common or global trend of increasing glacier melt in recent years. Now, boys and girls, there are guys that are running around the world in Russia and in Scandinavia and in Europe and in North America. There's people all over the world. And they take these government grants and they go out and they measure glaciers. And while they're measuring these glaciers, they come to a conclusion based upon their measurements. They've got the data right in front of them. And the conclusion is that worldwide, it's true, some are melting and some are growing, but there, in recent years, has been no conclusive evidence that the glaciers are melting away. Now, in some regions, when we have an El Niño, there are droughts and there are floods. And we think that it's caused by El Niño. We know that it occurs about the same time. And it may well be caused by it. But are you telling me now that we're going to start and stop these El Niños? Huh? You, honest to God, do you think a little puny man down here is going to do something about these humongous natural forces? That we're gonna put in some kind of a mechanical stop here, and that we're gonna control the thermostat here on planet Earth. Boy, that's pretty heady stuff, isn't it? Hey, we're at the halfway point. I got to give you a reminder here so that we can please as many of the federal communications agencies around the world as possible. And remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Now again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about global warming and climate change. Sometimes it's called CO2 emissions, or carbon tax, or greenhouse gas, or carbon tax. Greenhouse gas, I guess, is CO2 gas. These various and sundry labels that we hang on this thing called climate change or global warming, that's another term that's being used. For a long time, there was some debate. The debate's now over. The Congress is voting here in this country. We've decided that climate change is occurring and that climate change is occurring because of CO2 in the atmosphere, and we're going to change it. And we're going to tax you to pay for it. So I thought, well, it's time to make a report and let you know what the bottom line is. Now, as for the glaciers with the longest mass balance record of all, it's called the Storglaciern in northern Sweden. For the first 15 years of its 50-year record, it exhibited a negative mass balance of little trend. Thereafter, however, its mass balance began to trend upward, actually becoming positive over the last decade. So reports Breathwaite and Zhang in 2000. Global data on glaciers do not support claims made by the IPCC that most glaciers are retreating or melting. Additional information on this topic, including reviews of newer publications as they become available, may be found at www.co2science.org, subject glaciers. All right, so I'm going to circle off glaciers here on page 135. Now, there's a section here that deals with glaciers in Africa. There's three mountains in Africa that have glaciers on them, and I thought a report would be of some interest. Now listen to this, because the general consensus of opinion is these glaciers are melting because of the CO2 in the atmosphere. On the floor of the U.S. Senate in 2004, Arizona Senator John McCain described his affection for the writings of Ernest Hemingway, especially his famous short story, The Snows of Kilimanjaro. Then showing photos of the magnificent landmark taken in 1993 and 2000, John McCain attributed the decline of glacial ice atop the mount during the intervening years to CO2-induced global warming, calling this attribution a fact that cannot be refuted by any scientist. That was John McCain made that statement. All right, now I'm going to cite for you a number of scientists who intend to refute that exact statement, that the retreat of the glacier on Kilimanjaro is not caused by CO2, it's not caused by global warming. And there's a cause for it, but that's not it. New York Senator Hillary Clinton echoed Senator McCain's sentiments, displaying a second set of photos taken from the same vantage point in 1970 and then in 1999, the first depicting a 20-foot-high glacier and the second only a trace of ice. She said that in those pictures we have evidence in the most dramatic way possible of the effects of 29 years of global warming. In spite of the absolute certitude with which these two senators expressed their views on the subject, which allowed for no wiggle room whatsoever, both of these senators are wrong. They're both dead wrong. It's not true. Now, modern glacier recession on Kilimanjaro began around 1880, approximately the same time the planet began to recover from the several hundred year cold spell that we call the Little Ice Age. As a result, a number of people, including the aforementioned senators, declared that the ice fields retreated because of the rising temperatures, encouraged in this contention by a few reports in the scientific literature, as reported by Alverson et al. In 2001, Orion in 2001, Thompson et al. In 2002. This view of the subject, however, is highly simplified, and in the words of a trio of glaciologists, Molog et al. In 2003, who noted that glaciation in East Africa is limited to three massifs close to the equator. They are Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, Kenya, Mount Kenya in Kenya, and Rwenzori in Zaire, or Uganda, or both. And all three sites experienced strong ice field recession over the past century or more. In that part of the world, however, they report there is no evidence of a sudden change in temperature at the end of the 19th century. So reports Hastenrath in 2001, and that East African long-term temperature records of the 20th century show diverse trends that do not exhibit a uniform warming signal. King et al. 2000, Hay et al. In 2002, with respect to Kilimanjaro, they report that since February 2000, an automatic weather station has operated on a horizontal glacial surface at the summit's northern ice field, and the monthly mean air temperatures only vary slightly around the annual mean of minus 7.1 degrees centigrade. The air temperatures measured by ventilated sensors, Georges and Casher, reported in 2002, never rise above the freezing point, which makes it impossible to understand how ice could melt under such conditions. So let's take a look here at Kilimanjaro. They've got an ice station up there. They're measuring it daily. It never drops below minus 7.1 degrees centigrade, which is about 14 degrees below freezing, which would take it down to, say, around 15 degrees. Yet the ice is retreating and has been since 1880, but the temperature never goes below freezing. Now, how do you explain that? What's happening? So what caused the ice fields of Kilimanjaro to recede so steadily over such a long period of time, starting in 1880? Citing historical accounts of lake levels, Hastenrath in 1984, Nicholson and Yin in 2001, wind and current observations in the Indian Ocean and their relationship to East African rainfall, Hastenrath in 2001, water balance models of lakes Nicholson and Yin in 2001, and paleo-limnological data from Vercheren et al. In 2000 and Moog et al. In 2000 say, quote, all data indicate that modern East African climate experienced an abrupt and marked drop in air humidity beginning in 1880, and that they add that the resultant strong reduction in precipitation at the end of the 19th century is the main reason for modern glacier recession in East Africa, as it considerably reduces glacier mass balance accumulation, as has been demonstrated for the region by Kruss in 1983 and Hastenrath in 1984. In addition, they note that increased incoming shortwave radiation due to decreases in cloudiness, both effects of the drier climatic condition, plays a decisive role for glacier retreat by increasing ablation, as demonstrated for Mount Kenya and Rwenzori, so reported Kruss and Hastenrath in 1987. Got that? It is true that on Kilimanjaro, the glacier ice pack is receding, caused by a decrease in humidity and precipitation, as has been documented now by watching it year after year and measuring it from 1880, starting in 1880. That's not a computer model. That's the actual on-site observations. It's been going on for more than 100 years. And it's not done by one scientist or one scientific group. It's done by a number of them. Now, remember, this report is called The Climate Change Reconsidered. It's the report of the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, put out by the Heartland Institute, and it's $154. It's an 850-page manual, which takes up every scientific claim made by the original panel called The Report of the Governmental International Panel on Climate Change, sponsored by the government and bought and paid for by the government, and they got the science that they bought and paid for. Now, one of the ways that we use to deceive people is to give them the truth. Always remember that in order to deceive you, I have to tell you the truth. You see, if I always told you the truth, then you would always know the truth. But if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. Now, if I always lied to you, you would always know the truth. So in order for me to deceive you, I would have to tell you the truth and then mix it with error. Truth plus truth equals truth. Error plus error equals error. Truth plus error equals error. So what they do is they come out and they say, hey, listen, the glaciers are retreating. They go out and look at 200 glaciers out of 160,000, and they report to you that 80% of the 200 glaciers that we have reported on, that's 160, are in fact retreating. Then they don't tell you about the 20% that are not retreating out of the 200 that they've examined. And they don't tell you about the other 160,000 out there that they aren't examining at all. That's not science, that's propaganda. Now, if in fact worldwide glaciers are retreating, and the glaciers and the three glaciers in Africa are retreating. So they have measured those. And here's John McCain and Senator Clinton. They're not telling you about the 20% that aren't retreating out of the 200 that they are observing. They don't come in here and say, look, there's 160,000 of these glaciers in the world. We're only looking at 200 of them. They point to two glaciers that are in fact retreating and say, see, they're retreating. That's caused by CO2 in the atmosphere, and we need to give a 77-cent a gallon tax increase on your gasoline in order to solve that problem. Now, boys and girls, after we have paid these people this money, it is not going to reduce the amount of carbon and carbon dioxide in the atmosphere at all. That's not the way this game is being played. Let's take a big coal-fired power plant. Let's just use a number. They're putting 1,000 pounds of CO2 into the atmosphere every day. Okay? This legislation doesn't say to the offending plant, put a scrubber on your plant over here and stop putting 1,000 pounds into the air. It says that for that 1,000 pounds you're putting in the air, you got to pay us so many dollars in tax. And the amount of money that they're going to pay in tax is going to be far less than the cost of putting a scrubber on that coal-fired power plant and removing the 1,000 pounds of CO2. So they're going to pay the tax. And when they pay the tax, they're going to raise the power. All they're going to do is raise the price of the power they're producing and pass the cost along to you, the consumer. So if you think that you're going to get the power company over here to stop polluting the air because of a tax that's going to be placed upon them, you got your head up the wrong end of your anatomy again here, Bob. Let's wake up and smell the coffee. That's not the way the game is played. Now, there's another factoid that comes into play here. Corporations never pay taxes. They don't now, never have in the past. They aren't today, and they aren't going to in the future. Corporations are designed to be artificial beings that don't pay tax. They're an important part of the overall tax collecting system. I don't deny that. But ExxonMobil's never paid a nickel's worth of tax at any time for any cause or reason. Don't now, never will. They're going to collect it from you and turn it over to the government. That's true. As a part of their franchise for the monopoly that they occupy, they have to do something for it. And so the government comes along and says, okay, we're going to impose upon you this carbon tax. And the gasoline companies say, well, okay. And then the gas company, they're going to turn the turn the price mechanism over to their accountants. And as their taxes go up, then they pass that tax increase on to you. Only they put a little something in it for themselves so that they get paid for collecting the tax. So the 77 cents is for openers. It'll go up to double that. If you'll take a look at where government has come, for instance, let's just go back a few years. Do you remember George Bush when they were telling you how much the Iraq war was going to cost? Do you remember the number $50 billion? We're going to pony up $50 billion, go over and fight this war. It'll be short, sweet, and to the point. And then we'll make the Iraqis pay us back for it. So far, it's cost in excess of $1 trillion. The Iraqis ain't paid a dime. The Iraqis are making money hand over fist off of the war. And we're the guys that are paying for it. And $50 billion is a hell of a lot less than $1,000 billion. Now, $1,000 billion is a trillion. George Bush said that thing is going to cost $50 billion and it cost $1,000 billion. Okay, that's just one example. Now, that's a gross example. Ordinarily, it doesn't cost, you know, 100 or 200 times the amount. But whenever government gives you an estimate as to the cost, it's always half enough. Half. Just double it. 77 cents, double that to $1.54. That's what you're going to be paying in gasoline taxes. Only it's not going to appear on the pump. I filled up my tank yesterday, and I noticed that here in our state, 34 cents a gallon for gasoline tax. 34 cents. Federal and state. When this 77 cent a gallon tax increase hits, and the price of gas goes from $2.50 a gallon to $3.50 a gallon, it's not going to tell us that there's any more than that 34 cent a gallon gasoline tax. The price is going to go up by a dollar. But that 77 cents that's being collected is going to be put on ExxonMobil, it's going to be put on Conoco, and they're going to pass it along through, and it'll just be the price of the gas. You will never know that this tax increase was the result of this global warming legislation. Now, the politicians and the big business enterprises that are putting this thing over on us are really good. They are skilled. They've been doing this for 100 years. It's worked every time in the past. There isn't any reason to believe it won't work perfectly this time. But I just thought I'd report on it so that you'd know about how much Vaseline you need to buy. Now, we're talking about the ice fields of Kilimanjaro. Remember that? So what caused the ice fields of Kilimanjaro to recede so steadily for so many years? Citing the historical accounts of the lake levels and all of the climatological data from 1880 to the present. In further investigating this phenomenon, Moog, M-O-L-G, et al., applied a radiation model to an idealized representation of the 1880 ice cap of Kilimanjaro, calculating the spatial extent of the geometry of the ice cap for a number of subsequent points in time, and finding that basic evolution in spatial distribution of ice bodies on the summit is modeled well. The model they used, which specifically addresses the unique configuration of the summit's vertical ice mass, provided a clear indication that solar radiation is the main climatic parameter governing and maintaining ice retreat on the mountain summit plateau in the drier climate since 1880. Consequently, Moog et al. Concluded that modern glacier retreat on Kilimanjaro is much more complex than simply attributable to global warming only. Indeed, they say it is a process driven by a complex combination of changes in several different climatic parameters. A number of scientific studies, such as Kruss and Hastaranth, Hastaranth and Kruss in 1992, 1987, and a number of others, found with humidity-related variables dominating this combination. So not only do you have radiation from outer space, but we also have humidity. Kaiser, in 2004, similarly concluded that changes in air humidity and atmospheric moisture content seem to play an underestimated key role in tropical high mountain climate, noting that all glaciers in equatorial East Africa exhibited strong recession trends over the past century. They report that the dominant reasons for this strong recession in modern times are reduced precipitation and increased availability of shortwave radiation due to decreases in cloudiness, both of which phenomena they relate to a dramatic drying of the regional atmosphere that occurred around 1880 and the ensuing dry climate that subsequently prevailed throughout the 20th century. Kaiser et al. Conclude that all relevant observations and facts clearly indicate that climatological processes other than air temperature control the ice recession in a direct manner on Kilimanjaro, and that positive air temperatures have not contributed to the recession process on the summit, directly contradicting Orion in 2002 and Thompson, who in their words see the recession of Kilimanjaro's glaciers as a direct consequence solely of increased air temperature. Boys and girls, the air temperature up on top of the mountain is remaining constant, and it's below zero centigrade. It's below freezing. Ice does not melt below freezing. But what's happening here is you've got less humidity in the air, and you've got less precipitation adding to the ice field. All right, so there's your report. Remember, this comes from the Heartland Institute. If you'd like to get more direct scientific data, you can get it from www.co2science.org, subject glacier. You can also get it from the publication itself, which is Climate Change Reconsidered, the report of the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Change. You can order a copy from the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Once more, that's the Heartland Institute, 19 South LaSalle Street, Suite 903, Chicago, Illinois, 60603. Phone number is 312-377-4000. Once more, that's 312-377-4000, or you can go to their webpage at www.heartland.org. Hey, I'm about out of time again. I guess I've got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.